Got it. Thank you, Ursa. This portion of the Tom and Curly Show is brought to you by Bucky's. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. For nearly 50 years, Bucky's has been there for you and your car. Bucky's Auto Service Center.
I don't know who that was.
I know. I'm just somebody from like the 40s,
voice.
Old,
okay.
Radio time sort of thing. And now, Tom, we'll continue with our broadcast. All righty. It was the most common job. What was the most common job around here?
Retail salesperson.
Oh, everybody hates it.
Well, no, not everybody hates it. I think there are fewer retail jobs
everybody
around.
Everybody hates it, Tom. They say just like you should be in the Israeli army for 2 years, you should live in New York for 1 year, you should do retail sales.
Yeah.
For 1 year, just to get some idea of how horrible the general public is. They either waiter or you work in retail sales. And then you're like, oh, so that's how people treat other people and treat your merchandise.
Well, for the longest time, and right now it's still the most common job in the United States, but in the Seattle area, they've been displaced. In fact, they've been knocked down. They've been thrown, fell by the wayside, as the Seattle Times puts it, in 2016.
Uh-huh.
And the new king in town, and it's more likely a king than a queen, software developers.
Okay.
Thousands upon thousands of software developers in this town, and 4 out of 5 of them are men. There's a great FYI column about the area's top 25 jobs, and one of the things that he finds most striking about it is that how few of the occupations come close to parity of the sexes. The tech industry is always getting hammered of late in the last couple of years, because there's so many more men, 4 to 1 or 5 to 1 men to women. What's their problem? But as the FYI guy points out, if you look at the top 25 jobs, and the top meaning the most of us are doing it, the most populous of jobs, there are clear gender distinctions that in those 25 jobs where most people are, the higher paid ones tend to be dominated by men, and the lower paid ones tend to be dominated by women, and there are only a few in the middle. He cites, for instance, the female carpenter is just about a unicorn, because that is a 99% male-dominated profession.
So women don't like to do that.
There's no indication of likes or dislikes. This is just the state of the world as we now see it. And the second most is maintenance and repair work. That's also 95% male. The women have the third most skewed operation. Secretaries and administrative assistants, that occupation is 94% female.
Uh-huh.
So the idea is here.
Sounds like women want to do that work, but they don't want to be carpenters.
Well, no. I mean, the fact is that they don't. We don't know why people don't. I mean, there are a lot of women that may want to be in the tech world and feel like it's too the bro culture is suffocating.
Yeah.
There may be something about that with the trade unions as well. I don't know. You can speculate what you want, but that's not what this is. Just sort of indicating that we still are pretty gender specific when it comes to particular jobs.
Top
25.
I talked to a friend who works at Microsoft, asked her, why aren't there more women programmers? She is a programmer. And she said, it's cultural in the college. And that's the exact same thing that I told you. Remember,
really?
I met that Stanford. She's a head of the Stanford computer programming department.
Yeah.
And I ran into her 2 years ago. I said, why aren't there more women? She said, here's the problem. The computer has always been seen as the boy's domain in his bedroom since the 80s when he was a gamer. And then the same thing in the 90s that was in the boy's bedroom. The sisters weren't involved in it. It was closed door for the boy, and the boy did that. Then they would get into programming. So 101 programming, the girl gets into college. She goes to Stanford. She signs up for 101 programming. Before the prof begins to speak, she hears some kids sitting around her, realize there's 400 guys in the room and there's 300 girls, or three girls and 400. She goes, and it has that distinct odor of young men that don't spend a lot of time on hygiene. And she over the young girl who signed up for the class, here's the two guys going, hey, I've got this new algorithm I've come up with. It's actually faster than Google. She then turns to the guys and says, this is often the professor, the woman that runs the department. She said, she turns to the two guys and goes, isn't this 101? And they go, yeah. So then she quickly realizes, you know what? I don't belong here.
I'm already
too
far behind.
I'm grossed out by this environment, and out they go.
My brother is among the Tangney boys. He's the one most interested in science. He went for a physics degree at Seattle University, and he realized what a disadvantage he was that his dad was an English teacher and his mom was an English major, and that all the kids in his physics class grew up with scientists' dads and all this. Joe is a very bright guy, but he just felt like, yeah, I'm already behind because they've lived an entire life in this arena.
And what happened to him? Did he end up
getting
is he in retail now?
No, he ended up getting his degree in physics, but he is a high-end administrator in the mental health field.
All right.
You know, working with senior services. So the idea, though, is that you can completely understand that. The cultural indicators are such that women may feel like they're at a disadvantage with tech jobs. Mm-hmm. By the way, if you're wondering, it's not all lost. Women do make a decent pay for one of the high top 25 jobs as nurses. They average $81,000 a year. That's the top line for them.
And a number of men graduating from college compared to number of women graduating from college in 1975, I think it was 56% were men. The rest were women. And now it has flipped around. And now 56% of graduates from college are female. And the male now are taking the lower position of less graduates.
One last little wrinkle to this.
Yes.
FYI guy says, no, so just so you don't think that, well, these are set in stone, that these professions will always be dominated by men and or women.
Uh-huh.
He points out, here's a selection of jobs that were male-dominated in the 1950s, but are majority female today. So in the last 50 years, what professions have changed? Chemists, opticians, bartenders, photographers, bakers, veterinarians, real estate agents, fitness and recreational workers, travel agents, college teachers, dispatchers, and social workers all were dominated by men in the 50s, and now they're a majority of female. Although my guess is
there weren't that many women working in
exactly.
The
50s. Exactly. I mean, that may be a bogus statistic, but that's how the FYI guy ends his column.
There was a great big party out in Woodinville. It was called All White Party, and they had 1,500 people showed up, and they parked their cars. I think 500 to 600 cars were parked in a giant
field. And why was it
called
All White?
Did you wear all white,
okay.
Tom?
Okay. I just checking.
What were you thinking was happening at Woodinville?
I just want to make sure that everyone listened.
They think they're all wearing hoods? Leave your hood at home. Just leave your hood at home party. We all wear all white. It was out in Woodinville. The 500 to 600 cars parked in the farm field. And then they went over to one of these wineries. And the kids and the rest of the folks all had a chance to enjoy some of the great wine served there in Woodinville. All dressed in white. Most of them were millennials. So you can imagine what happened when they were leaving. The police pulled over a number for DUI. And there's a few altercations as well. But that was sort of the beginning of the end for a lot of the neighbors around there that said, you know what? We are so sick of what's happening here on the weekends where these cars are coming in, they're parking in these fields. Don't you realize under the Growth Management Act of 1990, whatever it is, you said there's a rural area and then there's an urban area. Mm-hmm. We're not in the urban area. So don't start treating us like urban where we've got these businesses set up and now we have people using our farmlands as parking lots. Can't have that anymore.
That's right. Well, in fact, this is coming to a head now because King County is looking at this ordinance. It hasn't been finalized. The vote's not expected until this summer, but Dow Constantine is behind this and he's working with stakeholders and property owners to determine how best to control the wineries, their shops, because there are a lot of people that live out in that area feel like they are being inundated and it's no longer rural. And King County, or at least so far the county council hasn't approved this yet, but the Dow Constantine ordinance suggests that they're saying that they determined that what happened with these wineries, they outgrew the codes from back, decades ago. So then they did not have permits to operate. They did not have health, sanitation, or clean water sources to operate. So it became a health safety issue as well as a zoning issue. So they've come up with this proposal where you can only have, their tasting operations from Monday through Thursday from 11 to 5 and Friday through Sunday from 11 to 9. And the wineries are objecting.
Wait, what's the weekend one?
11 to 9 p.m. So 11 in the morning till 9 p.m. So
on Saturday
hours,
and
on
Sunday.
Saturday and Sundays.
Okay.
But so these little winery businesses say the problem is we want to be open until like 10 o'clock at night during the week because we do half our business after 5.
Mm-hmm.
So if you force us to shut down during the week at 5, which I can imagine a lot of people say, well, a business can be open, from 8 to 5, and then they close down for the evening. They feel like they're taking an unnecessary hit. He said, we might have to close down and, limiting the amount of parking.
Nobody wants to be on that road that road at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You ever seen this thing?
No.
It is crazy. It looks like people racing away from World of the World at War?
War of the Worlds?
Yeah, yeah, out of New Jersey. I mean, it is a line of cars as far as the eye can see, moving at 7 miles an hour, that Woodinville Road. It's absolutely the worst.
Okay, but
All the wineries are along that sort of general area.
Right.
Nobody wants to, at 5 o'clock, at rush hour, or even 3 o'clock, get out there on that road and go to this winery. Yeah, so they're definitely curtailing the business, and they're caving to a couple of people in that area. They don't like the fact that it's changed. They've got their $800,000 and $1 million homes out there, and they want it to be rural. Well, it's not rural anymore, and there's businesses that are running businesses out of that, and they can't close down at 5 o'clock because they won't have anybody come.
Okay, well, so, I mean, the question is, these wine tasting operations, 1,000 square foot tasting room, we get 3.5 parking places, and they're going to be limited to events to 24 each year,
okay,
and would require a temporary use permit. So anyway, so you've got a battle of, I think, two goods, I suppose, that is the nature of Woodinville. If it's rural, is it not, you know, is it no longer allowed to have these kind of businesses open? I don't know if there's any. Right now, they are trying to lobby the Wine and Beverage Association, the Adult Beverage Winery Ordinance. They're trying to get people to work on it because it's still sort of being fashioned before the vote in the summer.
I feel bad for Valley, the guy I met yesterday on the streets, the guy selling CDs, Tom.
Yeah.
I told him to turn into 1032 to listen to his music coming
in.
He tuned in early. He's heard us talk about zoning in Woodinville.
And we cover the waterfront. Everything in the waterfront.
I'm trying to get my young black urban listener, the demographic, to go from 3 to 4. And here we are talking this.
Well, you started off with an all-white party.
I threw that in there, and I mentioned the hoods just trying to keep things lively.
I see.
Moving on to the
this next one. Get out the vote bullying.
That's right. We talked yesterday. I told you the story about in Michigan, 189 people were put under this study to see if you could get them to increase voter participation. And one way was one group got a letter saying, hey, everybody, just to let you know, after you vote, you're going to get a chance to see how all your neighbors voted, and they're going to get a chance to see if you voted. The people that got that letter went up 8%.
Yeah. And not how they voted.
No.
Just whether they voted.
Not
yeah.
How they voted. the next letter.
Open the ballot.
You know how they voted. Come on. You know how your neighbors vote.
Well, I mean, the idea is that they don't, or at least they're not legalizing. They're not issuing that information.
Well, if you have a yard sign, you're pretty much telling everybody, I'm for Hillary,
right.
I'm for the status quo.
That's exactly right, that people tend to know if you know your neighbors very well.
Yes.
But the idea is that what they're doing, so they're taking public information. In other words, everybody has access to this information. What this particular letter did was go to the trouble of tracking down, okay, well, did John vote in the last, you know, 10 elections? Then we look at Andrew, and then we look at the other Andrew, and they look at Tom, and they say, and then they say, okay, here's the Tom and Curly Show. Here are the four people that work on it on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how often they voted.
Right.
And they said, okay, John, here's how Tom and Andrew voted. We're going to, after the election, we're going to reveal who voted in the primary coming up, because primaries are underrepresented.
Mm-hmm.
And that might intimidate you to go ahead and vote if you figure that that's going to become public knowledge. The weird thing about that is most of us realize, yeah, it's public knowledge if people want to go to the trouble, but they don't bother doing that. So I don't really know how often my neighbor Jules voted.
Yeah.
But if it was told to me, he might feel like it's an invasion of his privacy when it really isn't.
It's that same story that hit a couple of years ago where I forget what newspaper it was, went and found out everybody that had guns, because it was all public. And then they said, here are all the people that own guns. Remember that story? Vaguely? And they said, your neighbor has a gun and this person has a gun. They're all in this neighborhood.
Well,
these are all the guns.
So, because that's public information.
They were able to get public information on who had guns registered. And they put it out there. But anyway, the thing is that the people said, well, that's not fair.
Yes.
You're highlighting this for a reason.
Right.
You're pointing this out. Same sort of thing. Is this a form of bullying that you now all of a sudden, through group pressure or nudging, I find that is it a form of bullying when Puget Sound Energy sends me and shows me where my usage of gas is compared to my neighbors, or how much water I use compared to my neighbor? Is that a form of group control?
Well, how do you respond to it?
I don't believe it.
Okay, there you go.
Because we hardly use any energy.
Yeah.
And I see my other neighbors, and they got all sorts of stuff. We don't have any fancy appliances. We barely have a washer and dryer that runs.
Then in your case, at least, it's ineffective bullying. See, to me, I get that. I find it valuable information. It probably doesn't. I think our energy use is so ingrained in our daily lives that it would be hard for us to be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to lose weight next month. Uh-huh. I think it would be hard to change. So I just find it interesting to find out, oh, I'm better off or I'm worse off. And it might spur, but I think what it's trying to spur is a civic good.
But it's about three to 15 seconds of you going, ah, how about that?
Yeah.
But again, nothing changes.
Probably not.
But if they were to put it on a list, like this guy's number one with energy conservation, and then all of a sudden you see yourself down at the bottom, you're like, crap, we got to do something, kids. Start unplugging those big 220 units.
I mean, maybe. If you're intimidated by your neighbors, most of us don't know who our neighbors are, and so they don't really care.
By the way, the boss tried to ban cell phones. He went into a meeting. The story is in the Wall Street Journal. Guy goes in. He notices no one's listening to him. They're also busy looking at his phone. So he says, that's it. No more phones at meetings. If you bring your phone to a meeting, this would be the last meeting you ever have. That's what the boss told everybody. And in offices across the country, phones are being banned from even just the workplace.
That's right. And I think the best illustration of this is even if you don't have your phone on, the fact that you have your phone on your desk at a meeting in front of you sort of limits the concentration you have and the focus energy you have. Something like up to like 40% of people are kind of distracted just by knowing that the phone is could possibly be activated, that is a distraction. And so they have a lot of companies saying that one of the things is they'll take your phone, or if your phone goes off, you can only talk on your phone at a community area. So it'd be like if we were all at Cairo, we'd have to go out to the front lobby to talk on our phone. The idea is that you should discourage it. And they did do an experiment where they put down an app. I think the new Google Android phone is going to have an app that'll tell you how many hours a day you're on the phone. And in this one particular case, the CEO realized he was on the phone 4 hours a day. He managed to cut it down to 1 hour a day, and he got he got eight of his other employees to do it as well. And the idea is that it is dropping. It is becoming a distraction, although it's not a useless device, because it can be handy in meetings to look up information. But in general, more people are distracted by it and see it as an escape. It's sort of like a version of doodling where you can, doodle to your heart's content. And so they've stopped it. I mean, they're trying to reduce usage. However, finally, in this particular case, this one guy who said, no, you can't bring any phones to meetings, he realized that after 2 weeks, it just wasn't very effective. So in the end, what he proposed to do was what? He says, if you have to have your phone, don't bother even coming to the meeting. I want your full attention when you come to the meeting. Mm-hmm. And about 40% of people didn't go to the meetings, but the people who were there were fully engaged.
So. More than 2,000 times a day, someone looks at their phone.
Yeah, that is unbelievable.
You don't believe that?
Well, yeah. I mean, it feels like that's awfully high, but
I'm sorry. What'd you say? Just look at my phone.
Exactly. I know. You have it out on your desk through the entire show. If you can ever tell if John's distracted,
I got two screens here. I got one that I try to get this, and then I try to get other things to return your stuff.
You are multitasking, and
multitasking doesn't work.
Exactly. There is no such thing as successful multitasking.
Okay, come back.
You disprove that every day on this show.
Thank you, Tom. We appreciate that. We're going to prove that we can continue to go on. We'll talk about one more time. We're going to go round and round on this. College may not be worth it anymore. Anymore.
Yes. Or, if it is, it's not for the reason you think.
And the best place to live if you want to be happy. We'll be right back. Coming in at number one. It's called Try Take Me by Valley. I promise some bumping music. Hold on, hit it.
Heard exclusively on the Tom and Curly Show.
Yeah. I reversed a couple of curse words there. So yesterday, I'm having her David Blaine, and this guy Valley sees me on the sidewalk, walk by, hey, you want to help a brother out and buy a CD? I said, I don't have any cash. He goes, that's all right, I'll take credit card. I was like, yeah, okay, crap, here's $10. And then I said, I'll tell you what, if I buy this from you, you got to do me a favor. You got to return the favor to me, and you've got to listen to the Tom and Curly Show.
I think you got the better deal.
Absolutely. We start talking about zoning in Woodinville. This guy's like, oh, my God, I'd rather have give me my CD back. Anyway. Give me a little bit more of the music. That's cut two. I asked him what song, and that's it. I'd have to read the lyrics to get into it, really know what he's rapping about, Tom, because, you know. You know how it goes. By the way, who am I supposed to promote? Oh, Muckleshoot Bingo. That's right. The Know-It-All Quiz is coming up tomorrow. And the Know-It-All Quiz is going to be giving you an opportunity to get two tickets to the Mariners game. It's Mother's Day Last Chance game. It's coming up on May 20th. 10,000 moms receive Mariners totes. Not any reason to go out and have a kid just before the game, but it is a pretty good tote. And you can also win those tickets by playing the Know-It-All Quiz. Yes, tomorrow with Muckleshoot Bingo bringing you all of that. Here we go. They try and take me, I said no, ain't gonna stop in this. They can ask me if I quit, stop saying stupid. It's you made away for myself. There you go. That's
great.
Try take me, Tom. All right, there we go. Question that you and I wrestled with numerous times.
Yeah.
You couldn't have two people absolutely more different. Yeah, you spent so many years in college. Right. I spent just, it was the four most arduous weeks of my life. I cheated to get in. I wasn't ready to do the work. I didn't care to do the work. I just felt like you had to do it. If you didn't do it, you'd be pumping gas. So I went to college. What a total and absolute waste of my father's money. What an awful waste of the money. And I remember the white knuckles as he would take the pen in his hand to write the check. And he used to say to me, now, what are you majoring in? And he would. And I remember him putting the zeros on the end of that Ithaca College tuition. So the question has always been bumping around, especially with the fact that college is now so unbelievably expensive.
Yes.
First, the Roy team was talking about it earlier. It gets down to, is college worth it?
And there have been a lot of debates. We've had a number of them over the years that we've had this show about what the value of college is. And if you look at college just in terms of the jobs that you get out of college, which I think is an unfairly narrow way to look at the value of college. But if you're just looking at the jobs prospects, what the irony here in this new study is that the people that could use it the most or need it the most are the ones least helped by the college degree.
Mm-hmm.
They say that if you already, for instance, they take middle-class families. A college degree is a wise investment if you already come from a middle-class family.
Uh-huh.
That the people that are middle-class that go to college earn, on average, 162% more over their careers than those who didn't go to college.
Okay.
So the idea, though, is what we're trying to establish is a college degree, is that the kind of hand up that minorities and or poor people can get into that middle class life? If you come from a poor background, does that degree help you? And that's the irony. They call it a cruel irony in this case. That it doesn't. Those born into poverty, college graduates earned an average only slightly more than their high school graduates that are born middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And that whatever advantage they have over their fellow poor income families or poverty stricken families, it dissipates over the course of the year, over the course of their lifetime. That there's a kind of a glass ceiling that even a bachelor's degree doesn't break through, and they think that class and race surely play a role, but that's not what they were investigating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're not trying to explain why. But the wage gap between high school and college graduates slowed to a halt now. 25% of college graduates now earn no more than the average high school graduate. And why is that? Because there was such a demand, especially because of tech and STEM, and a demand for educated workers. We've now outpaced that by the number of people who have earned those degrees.
Yeah.
So even that is getting us swallowed up.
The degree doesn't really say anything, but not having one does.
Yes, that's
right.
The other interesting
thing. And the idea is, like I said at the pre-show meeting, that if you went to a football game and the guy in front of you stands up, he has an advantage because he's standing, he can see more of the field. If everybody stands up, no one has the advantage. So as you, as the government continues to pour money into secondary or to after high school education, and you get more and more people being able to get more and more loans and more people go to college, although 50% of them don't graduate within the 4 years. Normally, they go six, and then a lot of other people never actually finish college. And a study that was done by the Federal Reserve Bank in New York found in 2014 that a third of people holding a four-year degree are in jobs that don't require it.
Fewer than 20% of all American jobs require a bachelor's degree.
Right.
The thing is, though, that if you don't have a bachelor's degree and you're competing with somebody with a bachelor's degree for a job that doesn't require a bachelor's degree,
you
do have a leg up.
They don't even need the bachelor's degree.
I know they don't need it. But the idea is that if you're an employer and you can hire somebody, you don't need their college degree, but you say, oh, he has a college degree, all things being equal, and he doesn't. Well, okay, I'll give it to the guy with the college degree.
Right, because it looks like he actually stuck through it and was able to have enough sex and beer for 4 years to be able to graduate.
Yeah, that's right.
When I was trying to get into the job world, I always lied that I had a college degree.
Yeah.
Right. It was a BA in marketing, Tom.
Yes. Or a BS. Yeah,
in lying. BS my way right on in. Yeah. And the other thing is that as the price continues to go up, higher and higher and higher, what do you get out of it? If somebody's paying on average, what is this, a four-year degree being anywhere from $40,000 to $135,000?
Oh,
I mean, it's even higher than that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got that right with my kids. It's like I've got $250,000 saved for both of them.
Yeah.
And I'm just like thinking, is this money worth it or could I do something else with it? I would say, you know what, guys, why don't I do this? I'll take $250,000 and invest in the stock market for you.
Yeah.
Power trading workshop, anything else. And then you go ahead. Don't bother going to college. I'll let you go experience life however you want.
Yeah.
Get some job and then make your way up. And that money will be working for you independently of the 4 years that you're going to spend getting laid.
But what I would then ask you, though, is
I mean that in the nicest way. The nicest way. Only
you
the bet. Finest kids.
You got permission. You put your phones together and they both agreed on what they were
kids
doing.
In the dorm room.
No, the question, though, John, is
Tom.
Are they better off just being handed money without having earned it? Because you always make that an important aspect of it. And could you argue that the kind of discipline, whatever discipline it takes to get a college degree, is a character builder in some ways? You are earning something that will, you know, do you well in school, rather than for those 4 years, you're going to invest that college education and they'll end up having $500,000 when they turn 30 or 25 or whatever you want to. But they haven't done anything to earn that.
Well, have they really done anything to earn the college degree?
Well, the thing is, I mean, and that's what I'm asking you. You can argue in order to get a college degree, you have to jump through a bunch of hoops that might be a disciplinary thing more than anything else. In other words, you have to get up at a certain time to get your classes in. You got to get your papers in.
Uh-huh.
In order to earn the degree, that might be as good a preparation for work as somebody who's just lollygagging around on the beaches.
Oh, I wouldn't let them lollygag.
Oh, you wouldn't.
You have to get a job.
Okay, gotcha.
Get a job anywhere. And I'll make a few phone calls. You get in the door and get past some people, and you get in there and you get a job. And then start working your way up. Right?
Okay.
So you're 21 years old. You don't have a college degree, but you'd say to the person, here's what's happened. My father saved the money, and he said, you have a choice. You can go to college or you can start your career. And I thought it would be nice to be able to have $250,000 in the bank. And rather than spending it on college, I was going to get some on-hands training and work with your company.
Okay.
If I were the person sitting across the desk, I would say, you know what? I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you a shot.
But does your 18-year-old daughters and sons feel like they know what they want to do as a career so they can get their foot in the door at the age of 18 or 19? Because oftentimes, even in college, you use your college years to try to figure out, what do I want to do?
Yeah.
And you can try various things. They may have tried four different dead-end careers, and by the time they get out of college, has that benefited them? And it might, depending on what the jobs are.
Who knows? They get in there.
But they're not just on a beach in Greece waiting for their dad to kick them
the money. No. I mean, beach in Greece is very similar to WSU. It's just a little colder there in the winter.
And prettier, I think.
My daughter's like, I'm going to become a Coug. Yeah.
Like, really? Okay. That's something. Come on, John.
That's
we
great.
Make fun.
No, I'm a proud.
Yeah.
I would be a proud Coug dad. Oh, my God. Take the money, stick it in the market. Be right back. Tom and Curly right here on Cairo Radio. Hey, thanks, Valley, for the music. We'll be right back.
Because everybody knows me, and I know them, and I believe that's the way we were supposed to live. I wouldn't trade one single day.
Is this Valley too?
No, hold on.
Small town USA. Give me a Saturday night, my baby, by my side.
Come on, Tom. Justin Moore coming at you here. Wolf 100.7 FM.
Rap to country on this show. I love it.
I ran into this guy on the sidewalk in Auburn.
Okay. What are you kidding?
For those of you who don't like country music, you should look up on Facebook or YouTube called Pandering. Just search country music pandering. Have you seen that? Andrew?
It's like, it is hilarious.
It is.
Every cliche.
Oh, yeah. The guy goes, I'm pandering. And it's about like, okay, now this is for the girls. This is for the guys. This is about trucks. This is about beer. And these are the lyrics. Oh, yeah. It is. It's a brutal takedown of country music, but I'm a fan. I love it. I'm a sap when it comes to that. So I don't love the rap. I love what the kids are rapping nowadays with their jewelry and their rapping. All right.
The kids.
Why does this seem to be a shock to you, Tom, that people who live in small rural and small towns and rural areas are happier than everybody else?
I don't say it's a shock, but I do think that we've done a number of stories that talk about we're always concerned about urban ills, and yet I think there is a higher, you know, opioid problem in rural areas, or not higher, but I mean that it extends out to the rural areas, so that there are a lot of kids feel like they're bored out there. They don't have a justification for life. We've done stories like that over the course of this our show, but also while I've been in the newsroom, and maybe those were stories because they were kind of counterintuitive. We think of the rural areas as kind of like, you know, the ideal sort of situation where you're not worried about traffic and all these kinds of the urban concerns mm-hmm. that we have here in Seattle. And so maybe that's just the case. So now the headline is, again, this is all in Canada, and it might be a country specific, but they do say that it jives with some polls and surveys in America as well. And that is that people are in small towns and rural areas feel happier than most people in urban areas.
Yes.
And a lot of that has to do with social cohesion.
Yeah, that's right.
That in a small town, now this can have its downside in terms of gossip, I suppose, but in a small town, you tend to know everybody mm-hmm. and you know what they do. And there's more social cohesion in terms of a race and economic, sort of distribution.
Yes.
That people are more similar. There are fewer, say, foreigners, as this points out in Canada, people that come from elsewhere.
Oh, yeah. See the kind there you go.
Social dynamics
All
are
right.
such that right now they're happier in the with a lot less density.
Mm-hmm.
In Canada and maybe U.S. too.
Right. It's all about isolation or community.